theoretical physicist working in a big theory group in Saclay. It's in the south of Paris, near the University of Orsay and the Institute for Hautes Études Mathématiques, and many, many good groups in physics and mathematics. And I am mostly doing, at the moment, works in quantum field theory, mathematical physics, and statistical physics, both. And it is my fourth time that I'm giving a course on quantum field theory, advanced quantum field theory. So I hope my lecture are now quite well done. So, but please don't hesitate in asking any kind of question during the lecture. First, that's the most important. Second, after the lecture, we have time. I will be around in the afternoon. So and so, don't hesitate or send me a mail if you don't see me. Okay. So so the purpose of this course, which as far as I understand is quantum field theory 2, is to, so this is quantum field theory 2, is to deepen what you have learned about quantum field theory in the course by Kostia Zarembo. And as far as I have seen from what he did last year and this year, he mostly introduced you to what's the most important way to quantize a field and to use it, which is what is called canonical quantization. So quantization using the generic and tools of quantum theory, which are how to build an Hilbert space of states and how to build the operators, the observable, and compute physical quantities. So what I'm going to treat in this course is first to apply his formalism, what he did, and but also to introduce you to another way to quantize a quantum field theory, or field theory, which is functional and path integral and functional integral methods. So the first week of this course, I think, will be mostly devoted to path integrals and what generalization, which is functional integral quantization. And I think you, from what I have seen on the wiki, you have already met path integrals in this program, first in the introduction to the quantum formalism, and second, also in the introduction to condensed matter, where I think you have seen some path integrals methods used to quantize spin chains and system, having a non-relativistic system involving coupled spin, quantum spins. Okay. So, but I will deepen a little bit that and show you how to apply that to functional integrals, means to how to quantize a field and not simply some simple non-relativistic system using those methods in full generality. So the second week will be focused on renormalization theory and one of the most important concepts, which is the concept of renormalization group. And I think that here again, Kostia Zarembo told you a little bit about why you need renormalization when quantizing, for instance, quantum electrodynamics, that there are some singularities at high energy which appears in the calculation, and you have to find a way to tame them and to get physical results if it's possible. So the amount of renormalization theory is to show in which case those singularities can be tamed, and if you can build a physical, a sensible quantum theory to use it to describe the world of particles and fields. And out of this concept, a concept very, very useful came out in the 70s, let's say, which is a concept of started in the 60s and bloomed in the 70s, which is the concept of renormalization group. Renormalization theory tells you that quantum theory have a very peculiar and very interesting behavior when you change the scale of energy at which you you are making experiments, for instance, at which you are probing the system you are dealing. And so the concept of group means how the quantities, the observable and also the Kuplik constant of the theory changes when you make a transformation which is a scale transformation, the scale at which you probe the systems. And this scale transformation form a group in the sense of a mathematical, a very simple mathematical group. But there is a very rich structure group of a group of transformation related to the properties of renormalization of a quantum theory, which comes out from this theory. And this has been very useful both in high energy physics, but also in condensed matter and statistical theory, statistical mechanics. And I think you will also hear about renormalization group in the lecture, in the other lectures, these 3 weeks by John Berlinski about introduction to statistical mechanics. We will see. It will be now, from some point of view, high energy physics and condensed matter in some area are a common subject. It's a bit strange, but it's they are a common subject since 30 years or 40 years. And it's related also to the fact that path integrals and functional integral methods, you know, create another link between high energy physics and statistical mechanics and condensed matter physics. Okay. And finally, the third week will be devoted to the study of non-abelian gauge theories, which, as you know, are the modern theories, are the building block for the modern theory of strong and electroweak interaction. So the success of quantum theory in the high energy physics, the fact that a quantum theory is not only a theory which deals with atoms and photons as it was built for in the 30s, but is the theory which describes all the interaction we know. But of course, for gravitation at the moment, where the situation is interesting but unclear, goes to the success, the fact that people have been able to build generalization of quantum electrodynamics, which are called non-abelian gauge theories or Young-Mills theory. And in fact, Young-Mills theories and non-abelian gauge theories have been really understood and built once the issue of renormalization was really understood in physics, and also once a very important tool to deal with non-abelian gauge theories are those functional integral quantization method, because in those theory, the canonical quantization scheme is not always enough to get information. So those are two complementary. So we have at level zero, we have canonical quantization. And of course, canonical quantization and functional integral quantization are not just two different quantum theories. It's the same. They are just two different representations. This is Z. Quantum theory, quantum mechanics, if you want. There are just two different and complementary ways to compute things in quantum mechanics. And you have to be, it's very important to understand that. There is only one quantum theory which describes the world, but you have different ways to represent and compute, deal with them to manipulate the object in quantum theory. And in some case, canonical quantization is the best one. In some case, path integral is the best one. And in many cases, you need to understand both and to jump and to glue them together. Okay. Okay, so first, let me go back to path integrals. And today, I will do some remainders on path integrals methods. But I will deal with an aspect of that you probably have not discussed a lot yet, which is the fact that you can define path integrals at what is called at Euclidean time. And that's a very important aspect because it's the aspect of quantum theory which makes a bridge between condensed matter and energy physics. And it has also been important, for instance, in devising new ways to study gauge theories, like, for instance, doing computer simulation, computer calculation of gauge theories using what is called lattice gauge theory. So putting, defining theory on a discrete space-time and making calculation on the computer instead of dealing with the theory, relativistic invariant theory, in a continuous space-time and trying to do analytical calculation. Okay, so it's an important way to understand what is called Euclidean quantum field theory. And so let us start from, and I think that's all what I will be able to do today. Okay, so let me first start from something you have seen already, which is simply, I consider a simple quantum mechanical system. So I'm doing quantum mechanics at the moment. And I'm just studying the simplest system you have been studying in the first part of your lecture in quantum mechanics, which is a particle, for instance, with a mass m, non-relativistic, of course. So the only parameter is the mass m, and let us say it's on the position is a parameter q. Well, let us say it belongs to the line, so it's the particle is on the line. Okay, let's see, it moves on the line, and the Hamiltonian for a particle is, let us say, it's of course p squared over 2m plus v of q, is v some external potential. And we can take, for instance, v of q equal, let us say, m omega naught squared over 2 q squared if we are considering an harmonic oscillator. Oscillator, but that's not essential, but it's a useful example. And you know that you have seen in the quantum field theory course that, in fact, one of the most important objects is what is called the evolution operator. So the evolution operator that I will denote u of t is a unitary operator. So it's an u of t. It is a u dagger of t is u minus 1 of t, and it's nothing but u of minus t in this case, because the Hamiltonian is real. It's a unitary operator. And it tells you how the state, the quantum state of the particle, evolves with time according to this. So it's, in some sense, the solution of the Schrödinger equation. So, and u of t is simply the exponential of t over I h bar times the Hamiltonian. Okay. And if you start from a particle in a state psi naught at time t equals 0, then you know by solving the Schrödinger equation that the quantum evolution of the state is a state psi t, which is simply u of t times. So the operator applied to the state, the initial state. Okay. So now you know that, in fact, we are, and in our case, in fact, since we are considering a particle on a line, we may consider as a basis of states the position states of the theory, which I denote q, which are the eigenstates of the position operator. So q describes a particle localized at the state q. So q position is equal to q times q. So it describes a position, a particle staying at state q. And you know that, for instance, the unity operator can be written as dq, the projection operator, while the scalar products of two position states, eigenstate, is a Dirac delta function of q1 minus q2. And you know that the most important formula is that the matrix element, the matrix element of a position operator can be written as, so let me write, so I start from a particle at time zero at the position q initial, and I end up, I would like to see what is the probability amplitudes for the particle to evolve from the position q initial to q final during a time t. So what I have just have to compute is this matrix element of the evolution operator between those two states. And you know from Feynman, path integral, this can be written as an integral over all the possible histories or non-classical trajectory of the particle, such that at time zero, the particle is at the initial point. At the final time t, the particle is at the final position of exponential of I over h bar times the action for the trajectory, where the classical action is, the classical action is just the trajectory is integral from the initial time to the final time. We integrate over some intermediate time, and the action is m over 2 times dq over ds squared. This is the kinetic energy minus the potential energy. Okay? So this is a classical action. Okay? Okay, so now let us consider of course, this path integral representation is a way to represent the matrix element of the evolution operator at real time. So now the question is that you can see very, you may ask a question, what's happened if we consider time t as a complex variable. See? Okay. It's at the moment, I'm just thinking as a mathematician. I'm asking, what if time was real, was imaginary instead of real? What if time is complex? And therefore, I will consider the following situation. I consider that now time is just the real part of a complex variable. So I have a complex plane here, complex plane. And I'm considering that time is a real, so physical time. This is a physical time. And time may have an imaginary part. And you may ask, does this kind of calculation make sense? And you can see very easily that, for instance, if you consider the harmonic oscillator or any potential bounded, in general, the energy spectrum of the theory is bounded from below. This is a ground state energy. You may have a continuum state at the origin, but In general, the Hamiltonian is unbounded from below, which means that it's bounded from below, it's unbounded from above. And therefore, you see that if you consider that time is a complex variable in this evolution operator, you make, for instance, diagonalize u of t. You can write that u of t is a sum over the energy eigenstate of n times e t over I h not h bar e n, where, of course, I just said. Okay, and I assume that the spectrum is E naught less than E1, less than E2, etc. So I order the eigenvalues by growing, and I don't. I'm saying at a very simple level, so I don't look if the spectrum is discrete or continuous, or it's, we are in a more complicated situation. For instance, in the case of the harmonic oscillator, the spectrum is discrete up to infinity, to plus infinity. And then you see that, in fact, of course, this is a pure phase. And if time is real, but if time is imaginary, then something happened if the real part of time, the imaginary part of time, is positive. So in fact, you may consider two cases. You may consider that the real part of time is positive, or the real part of time is negative. And in the upper half plane, you realize immediately that this operator is unbounded. Those coefficients grow with n. Yes?
You mean imaginary part?
Yes, imaginary part. I'm sorry. My hand is not doing what my mind. This is the imaginary part. Yes. Okay. So you see that here the operator u of t is an unbounded operator, while here u of t is a bounded operator. And bounded operators means simply that if you take any state psi, if you take u dagger times u of t, u normalized by the norm of the state, this is always less or equal to some quantity which is called the norm of the operator. This is the norm of the operator u of t. Okay. And bounded operators play a very important role in the mathematical theory, in the mathematical formulation of quantum theory, which has been developed by John von Neumann in the 30s and after that. So it's a very important object if you are interested in doing mathematical physics and mathematics out of operator, of quantum operator. Okay, but here I just say that u of t is a bounded operator in this domain, and u of t is not a bounded operator in this domain. So which means that you can make calculation and compute matrix element and etc. in this domain, okay, in the lower half plane. So u of t, the evolution operator, is a well-defined operator only if m of t is less or equal to zero as a mathematical object. Okay. So this seems simple but a bit formal mathematics. We'll see that it leads to very very interesting questions. Because let us consider in particular what's happening if t is purely imaginary. If t is purely imaginary, I can write this t as minus I times tau, where tau, of course, is positive, has to be positive, because I have to stay in the lower half plane. And I call it, for some reason, Euclidean time. And I will explain to you why this imaginary part of physical time is called Euclidean time a bit later. So let us just keep it as a definition. If t is purely imaginary, minus its imaginary part is positive, and I call this Euclidean time, where, of course, t is physical time. Okay. So you see, physical time imaginary means Euclidean time real, and Euclidean time imaginary means that the physical time is real. Okay. And if I do this, the evolution operator u of minus I tau that I will call the Euclidean evolution operator of tau, that's the definition, is of course, so take it as a definition, call this the Euclidean evolution operator. Euclidean evolution operator. This, well, you take the definition of u of t. This is simply exponential of, remember, I had a minus I t, I had a minus, so this is minus tau over h bar times the Hamiltonian. Yes?
You might have explained this in words, but I just missed this. In the middle section of the board, we say t purely imaginary, then we define tau, and then we say t is physical time. Are we supposed to group together the line t purely imaginary and t physical time?
No, this is just a definition. That's just a denomination. Denomination. Of course, t here is the physical time. And now, when I, so it's just a definition.
Just when I see t purely imaginary and then t physical time.
Yeah, if I take a quantity expressed as a function of a physical time, like the evolution operator, and I make this physical time, instead of being real, to be an imaginary number, staying here, so this is the axis where time is physical. If I take time and in my formula, as a mathematician, make it imaginary, then, of course, it's no more physical. It doesn't have any physical meaning. But as a mathematical variable that I call physical time, it exists. And then this Euclidean time, defined by this formula, now becomes real. You see? Real in the mathematical sense, not in the... It's just the denomination here is just a bit misleading, because you may mean real as a real variable, a real number, or as a real physical variable which has a physical meaning. So here I am using real in the term of just a mathematical denomination, I say. Something is real when it's a real number. I'm not thinking about what is real object. But you know anyway that in quantum physics, the concept of reality is a bit more subtle than in classical physics. So up to now, if I pronounce the name real, usually it will be real number. Okay? Okay. So let's go back. If you take the evolution operator, make time imaginary, and re-express everything in terms of this new variable tau, then the evolution operator becomes the exponential of minus tau over h bar times the Hamiltonian, where now tau is real. So I assume that if tau is real and positive, of course, then you should think about something. You should think that, oh, this looks like something very simple. This looks like a density matrix of the same system at finite temperature. Remember, so this object is analogous to a density matrix. Remember that we know that if we have a quantum system. Now, so what is this density matrix? Imagine you have your quantum system. Here you have your oscillator, your quantum oscillator. Okay? And it exchanges energy with a big thermostat at a given temperature T. Then you know, and it has in equilibrium, that you know that the quantum state of your system is not described by a pure state. It's not a pure state anymore, because it's entangled with the thermostat, and you don't know the properties of the state of the quantum oscillator at a very precisely. It always exchanges energies and quantum correlation with the thermostat. So the best you can do is to describe what are the probabilities for the oscillator to be in a given quantum state. And the probability is related to the temperature. So you know that the density matrix of this object. So if there is a temperature, there is a factor which is 1 over the Boltzmann constant times the temperature. And you know that the density matrix of the object, the density matrix, which I call rho beta, is 1 over an object which I called z, which is a partition function, times exponential of minus beta times the Hamiltonian. And that's simply because this density matrix may be written as a sum of the eigenstate, energy eigenstates, times the projector operator on the energy eigenstate, times Pn, where Pn is something like the probability to be in an energy eigenstate n. And we know from the principle of statistical physics that this probability is proportional, so there is a normalization factor, to the exponential of minus beta times the energy of the states. This is called the Gibbs probability distribution. You see? Okay. And you see that there is a mathematical analogy, which is quite simple. You see that this probability, and therefore the density matrix, in fact, has exactly the same form than this evolution operator taken at imaginary time. You see that mathematically, it's a mathematical formula, it's a mathematically, the math tells you that rho beta is just 1 over z times ue of tau with the Euclidean time tau related to the temperature T of this system in equilibrium with a big thermostat by the relation and what is this relation? This relation is simply that you identify beta with tau over h bar. So the relation is that beta is 1 over kb times t is you identify it by tau over h bar. Okay? And if you have one relation to remember after this lecture, it's this one. Okay? So you see, you have it's a mathematical analogy between a quantum system studied at imaginary time and the same quantum system in equilibrium at a finite temperature. You see? Okay. And in this relation, you see that at the denominator, here you have the temperature. And here you have h bar. And that's not, there is something which is not only mathematics here. If you consider a system, classical or quantum, in equilibrium with the thermostat, you are doing statistical physics, you know that this system experiences fluctuation. There are thermal fluctuations because it exchanges energy with the thermostat. So it's not staying in the same classical or quantum states. It moves. So here, in this, here you have thermal fluctuations. Okay. Here you have quantum fluctuations. A quantum system experiences quantum fluctuations. The vacuum, for instance, is not completely, it's the lowest energy state, but it doesn't mean it has no dynamics. You know that you have quantum fluctuation in the vacuum. Okay. And the quantum fluctuation in a quantum system are, of course, proportional to h bar. Well, h bar is fixed, but if you express the quantum of action with respect to the other typical action of your systems, if h bar is small, you know that the system is almost classical, and if h bar expressed in the typical units of the system is large, you know that the system is very, very quantum. The same when you are doing statistical physics. When you are doing statistical physics, if the temperature is small, you have almost no thermal fluctuation. The system is in its equilibrium, lowest energy state. If the temperature is very high, the system is very hot, and there are a lot of thermal fluctuations. Okay. And so this simple formula tells you that, in fact, there is a mathematical and analogy, which is, in fact, quite important, and you can use it in many, many different contexts, between the thermal fluctuation of a system and the quantum fluctuation of the system. There is an analogy. It doesn't mean that the quantum fluctuation come out from thermodynamics. It doesn't mean that the thermal fluctuation have a quantum origin. It means simply that there is a mathematical analogy. You see? Okay. And you have to keep that in mind.
Can I ask?
Yes?
So in the quantum system, does that mean we are at zero temperature? And conversely, in the Gibbs probability bath, do we assume that there's no quantum mechanics going on?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Sorry. So in the quantum system, are we assuming that we are at zero temperature?
No. I'm considering here the quantum system has no temperature.
So this is valid for any temperature at any temperature.
But in fact, no. Well, in fact, this point describes, in fact, the quantum system at a finite temperature. I take with you. What this analogy tells you, I think you are right. See, what this analogy tells you is that if you start from studying the evolution of a quantum system at zero temperature, because it's there, it's not coupled to anything, it's isolated. So you are solving the Schrödinger equation for a particle on the line, for instance. So the system is at zero temperature. It doesn't feel outside world. But if once you have solved the dynamics, you look at what the dynamics would look like if time was imaginary, then in fact you are considering the same system at equilibrium. So there is no dynamics anymore. You are interested at the equilibrium time invariant properties of the system, but at a finite temperature.
see. Okay, is that more clear?
Yeah, I guess, it seems to me one is an equilibrium description and one is a dynamical description, kind of.
At the moment, I'm just saying that the evolution operator at imaginary time gives you, by your mathematics, the equilibrium distribution of the same system at finite temperature. Okay. Once you use this relation, it's a mathematical analogy. At the moment, it's a mathematical formula. Okay? Okay, so let me continue. You have to be used a little bit to that, but you will see what we can do with that. Once you do that, you have, of course, this normalization factor. This normalization factor, Z, is called the partition function. And it's just there in order to make the sum of the probabilities to be equal to 1, of course. So Z is there so that the sum of n of Zn is equal to 1. The probability has to be probabilities. Okay. And therefore, Z is defined as the sum over n of exponential minus beta times the energy. That's a classical definition of the partition function. And in our case, you can check very easily that this is simply, you can write this as the trace of exponential minus beta h. This is the trace of this operator, exponential minus beta times the Hamiltonian as an operator, simply because this is sum over n. N times E minus beta H, and you use this formula for, and therefore Z, the partition function, is just a trace of the Euclidean evolution operator at Euclidean time tau, or if you prefer, the trace of the physical evolution operator of the system at time minus I time. So the partition function of your system at equilibrium with the thermostat temperature T is just given by the trace of the evolution operator, quantum evolution operator of the system, simply taken at a time which is not a real number, but a purely imaginary number. Okay. So this seems quite a bit some formal manipulation, but we shall see that it's in fact there is something going very deep going on with this once you do that, because once you do that. Up to now, I have considered the expression of the evolution operator as an operator acting on a Hilbert space of states. And now you can use the path integral formulation. You know that you can write the matrix element of the evolution operator in terms of path integral. And therefore, you can play the same game to write the matrix element of the Euclidean evolution operator. And you see that basically you have to take the formula for the path integral over histories of the particle depending on time, but instead of doing that, what you have to do is to consider that the position Q of the particle
depends now on Euclidean time tau instead of t. And I will just give you the results, but it's very easy to reproduce the result. Now, if I am interested in considering what is the matrix element, I'm interested in computing the same matrix element of the evolution operator. So I'm interested in computing the matrix element between the initial position state Q initial and the final position QF. But I'm now interested in computing the matrix element of the Euclidean evolution operator, namely this operator, exponential of minus tau over h bar h instead of exponential of t over I h bar h. Okay? And in fact, the answer is that it's given exactly by the same formula. So instead of having as a function of time from 0 to t, instead of summing over all the positions in QI and QF at real time, so this is at physical time, I am to do the same calculation. So I have to sum from initial time 0 to final time tau. So sigma will be now at given time. I am summing over all the possible histories, starting from the same initial condition and summing the same final position QF. So I have to do an integral of Q of sigma with Q of 0, Q initial, and Q at the final Euclidean time tau called the QF. Okay, but now I have to make this change of variable in the action. And if you do the calculation, you make the change of variables, you will get, instead of having exponential of I over h bar times the action, the classical action, you will get the exponential of minus 1 over h bar times a new quantity, which is called the Euclidean action. Okay. And this Euclidean action, I don't know if you can view it here. This Euclidean action SE of Q, it has almost exactly the same form than the form of the classical action. Simply, we integrate along this trajectory from 0 to tau along all the intermediate time. And if you find the calculation, you find this is the same value. This is dq over d sigma squared. So this is the analog of a kinetic energy, but expressed in Euclidean time. So it's m over 2 times the speed of the trajectory expressed in Euclidean time. But then there is a plus v of q instead of minus. So it's important. It's very important here. So what are the difference? Here you have a plus, and here you have a minus instead of an I factor. So when you are interested in computing this matrix element, you have a sum over trajectories, But those trajectories describe the evolution of a particle as a function of the Euclidean time sigma, where sigma, of course, is the analog of S, so sigma is I times S in this formulation. In the same way that tau was I fat times time here. Okay? And the trajectories are weighted not by a phase, but by the exponential of minus 1 over h bar se of q. So now you don't have any phase, but the trajectory is weighted by the analog of a Boltzmann factor. Which is exponential of minus 1 over h bar times this Euclidean action. So you see, you have some kind of sum over the configuration of the trajectories of the particle, an exponential of minus 1 over h bar times some energy. So this means that in this Euclidean path integral formulation, a trajectory which minimizes this Euclidean action is very probable and has a half probability to arise in this sum of a trajectory, while a trajectory which is goes very far away has a high dq over d sigma, has a high v of q, so it's very improbable. So this is a high probability low probability, you see. Okay. So finally let me continue along this line. Oh, here I am. Then you may continue the game. And see, I am interested in computing the partition function. Finite temperature for my system. Remember, the partition function was defined here. This is a trace of u of the Euclidean evolution operator. Okay. So, z beta is trace of e minus h, so this is a trace of the Euclidean evolution operator at Euclidean time tau, with as always tau related to the temperature and to beta by this fundamental relation. Now, let me revise the trace. The trace of an operator is just the sum of the diagonal matrix element. So I can use the formula that I wrote just here, which tell me that I can take, when I write a trace, as a sum over diagonal elements, the integral over all the possible positions of the particles times the projection of this on the projector onto the position eigenstates. Therefore, I can write the trace as integral over all the possible positions of the particles of q times ue of tau times q. So that's one possible way to write the trace. You see? But this object, I know how to write it using my path integral formulation for the evolution operator at Euclidean time. So this is simply integral
of q of exponential of minus 1 over h bar st of q. And simply now, my boundary condition here, instead of integrating with fixed boundary, initial and final boundary condition, first, since I'm interested in two initial and, well, initial and final position being the same, now I am considering that the initial position is equal to the final position, and it's equal, equal to the q in this formula. And now I integrated, I integrate over all the possible q, you see? So this means that in this path integral formulation, I am integrating simply over periodic trajectories at Euclidean time. And I have no constraint on the initial and final position. I only have as a constraint that the initial position is equal to the final position. In other words, I just have a constraint that q of 0 equals q of tau. You see? And now I am considering periodic trajectory, so with a period, in Euclidean time, so given by the fundamental relation I had before, h bar over kb times the temperature. Okay? So the partition function is given by a path integral over an Euclidean path integral, so an integral over trajectories moving in Euclidean time. And the relation, the temperature, is given by the inverse of the period. Temperature proportional to 1 over the period. And so, in fact, instead of having this picture, if you are interested into a quantum system at finite temperature, you have to think in your mind of the space of complex time. So it's a bit, it's a mathematical analogy, but it's a very good picture. Picture complex time as a cylinder. Of course, you have real time. So this is physical time. Physical time is physical time. It goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. But now, consider that Euclidean time, the imaginary part of the time variables now, is a circle. It goes from 0 to tau. And one is goes to tau, closes itself. So in fact, view this is physical time here. This is time. Physical time goes from minus infinity to plus infinity, as usual. But Euclidean time as a period, and the period is proportional to the inverse of the temperature. So here I have a period. So tau equals h bar over kBT. Okay?
Okay. And that's something which is quite useful to remember, because this picture seems just a picture for a mathematician, but in fact, many, many physical problems can be understood when you do the math of a quantum system at finite temperature in terms of having a system and a complex time with this period. For instance, one of the nicest examples, nice application, this idea, is the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy for a black hole. And I will describe a little bit that later on. Okay? Or perhaps next or tomorrow. Okay? So, and with this application, I think I can now go back to the denomination of, let us go back to the denomination of Euclidean time. Okay. So, tomorrow we will discuss what this idea becomes for a quantum field theory and not simply a non-relativistic particles. But already, instead, let us consider now a relativistic system. Relativistic system. So of course, space-time is Minkowski space. Minkowski space. So Minkowski space-time is space-time where you have four-dimensional vector given by time and space. So this is a four-vector. You have the coordinate in space-time. And the Minkowski metric is given by the distance element, ds squared. And I will use this notation, dt squared plus dx squared. So I am using one of the two conventions for the signature of space-time. The signature of space-time of the metric is taken to be minus plus plus plus. That's one choice. And in addition, as you noticed, I have set the convention that the speed of light is normalized to one. So I'm just using distance unities and time unities so that the speed of light is one. So it means, for instance, that if I am using as unit of time the year, the unit of distance is the light year, not the meter or the kilometer or the parsec. Okay, so now this is a distance element. Distance element. Square distance element in this metric at real time. Now, perform this operation instead of going, what's happening if time becomes imaginary? If I consider, if I write t equal minus I tau, so I consider that now time is imaginary, then the distance element becomes obviously plus d tau squared plus dx squared. And this is the distance element of an Euclidean four-dimensional space. So here, the space was Minkowski space-time, which we can denote M13, one direction of time and three dimensions of space. Here, space is simply R4. Euclidean time is just first space coordinate. Yeah. So hence the denomination of Euclidean time. When you do this transformation, the time, the imaginary time, becomes simply one of the directions in Euclidean space. So hence the denomination Euclidean time. Yes?
Should the Euclidean space be a cylinder rather than R4 because tau is periodic?
No. Here, it's not periodic. Here I am just, it's when you are considering what's happening at finite temperature, then it becomes.
Right, see, when you do the transformation, you got tau to tau plus 2 pi.
Yeah, but I'm sorry. Here, tau is unfixed, so I should have I should rather add use the notation S, if you prefer. This is the S, the sigma which is here. So, I'm sorry. Yeah. Here I forget about the fact that I'm computing a partition function. I went to the first step of my.
But I mean, in this case, you put a you rotate the t to minus I times sigma.
Yes.
And you can always change sigma to sigma plus 2 pi and get the same t.
No, because here the here I have no period. Here I am considering, I am back to the first part of the lecture. Before computing, no. Time, you may consider time as something periodic only where you are interested in computing a partition function.
Well, I say you start from the Minkowski matrix.
Yes.
And do the change of variable.
Yes.
And put t equals to minus I times the sigma.
Yes.
So the sigma and sigma plus 2 pi should give the same point in the original.
No. Why should they?
Because it corresponds to the same t, right?
No. There is no periodicity here.
I change sigma to sigma plus 2 pi.
Yeah. Okay, so t becomes t plus 2 pi.
It's a 2 pi I, right?
Yes, so what?
And the 2 pi I should be the same.
No. It's not because something depends on the complex variable that it's periodic in this variable.
You're thinking of the exponential of 2 pi I. Right?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. You see?
Okay, I see.
Here is simply, if you prefer, it's simply that I start from a time variable which is real here, and at some point in my calculation, I'm saying, okay, what's happened if I was considering time along this direction? So this is not periodic, this doesn't have to be periodic. It's only when you compute a partition function at a given temperature that you consider that this is periodic. You see? Okay. And finally, okay, so this is why people, physicists use this denomination of Euclidean time, simply because in fact, when you consider relativistic quantum field theory, then you can map a relativistic quantum field theory into a field theory in Euclidean space. And time is just one of the dimensions. Okay, so let me finish this lecture by discussing very briefly correlation functions. I think I have 5 minutes, but 10 minutes. Correlation. Before doing that, one last remark. You see that the temperature is proportional to the inverse of the period. Okay? And therefore, the trivial remark is that here, trivial remark, but deep. Trivial, but important fact. What's happening when the temperature goes to zero? on this part of the equation, zero temperature means that tau t goes to zero means that the period tau goes to infinity. So Euclidean time becomes infinite. You see, Euclidean time becomes a real value. You can forget about the fact that it's periodic, because the period goes to infinity. Okay? Now, on this side, when you are computing the partition function, on this side, remember that beta is 1 over kbt. Beta is 1 over kbt. So t goes to 0 means beta goes to infinity. So here, what only counts in the trace is the lowest energy state. Only the bound state. Not such that E naught is a minimum. Of the EN survives. Therefore, in this limit, what you are computing when you are computing Z of B when beta goes to infinity, what you are computing is simply exponential of minus 1 over kbt E naught. So taking the limit when the period goes to infinity amounts to project on the ground state. Understand what's going on? If you are interested in quantum theory in computing quantity related to the ground state, you can do that using a functional integral at Euclidean time and taking the period going to infinity. And that's a very important, very simple remark, but very important remark for calculation. See? And this can be used if you are using correlation functions. For instance, remember, if you are interested in computing not only, imagine that you are interested in computing not the trace of exponential minus beta h, but you are interested in computing the trace of exponential minus beta h times a, where a is some operator of the theory, of the quantum theory. And I will consider simply A to be a function of Q. Simply, it's a function of the position. For instance, it's you have the function and you are interested in computing what is the probability for a particle to be localized in the domain space. So in fact, you compute the expectation value of the observable A of Q, where A of Q is some function. Well, of course, you can write this operator, since it's a function of the position, you can write this simply as integral of a Q, the projection of Q times the function A of Q. Well, now this is a function of a variable, position variable. I decompose A in the eigenbasis of the position eigenstates. Okay? You can now rewrite this as integral over dq, a of q times q e minus beta h q. Apply the path integral formula.
And you see very, very easy that this is just equal to an integral over all the periodic trajectories with the same period than here, with tau period tau equal h bar over k dt times exponential minus 1 over h bar times the Euclidean action for the trajectory, and simply at the initial and the final time, you multiplied this factor but by a of q at sigma to 0. Okay, so in other words, this is simply given by a path integral where you integrate over trajectories which as a function of time goes like that, and simply at time 0, you multiply by a of q at sigma equals 0. You see? So it's given by also by a path integral formula. So I can compute the matrix element of a. OK. And now here comes the thing which is more interesting. You may be interested in computing what's happening when you consider in the Heisenberg picture. And I think I will just give you the results. You may be interested in the Heisenberg picture. What's happening when you consider two operators and two operators at two different times, T2. You know that in the Heisenberg picture, you can associate operator to time. And you may be interested in computing what is the trace of exponential minus beta h times a of T1 times b of T2, computing an object like that. And in order to do that, in fact, what you have to do is first to let the system evolve in this given time. I will just give you the results and will explain to it tomorrow. You start from time t equals 0. You evolve to time t2. Then you apply b of t2. Then you evolve up to time t1. Then you apply the quantity a of t1 exactly like here. Then this is u and u minus t. Then you go back in time because you have those u of minus t operator in the Heisenberg picture. And then you go like that. And therefore, you can write this exactly as a path integral, q of sigma of exponential minus 1 over h bar the Euclidean action of q. And simply, you have to take an history which depends both of real time and of imaginary time. You have to multiply the factor by the value of the observable at time t2, at time t1, before closing the history. You see? Yes?
If over there we're using t's,
yes,
then how come we are invoking imaginary?
Yeah, I think either I explain a little bit more the meaning of this formula, or I leave it for tomorrow morning. What do you think, Dan?
could take another 5 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Because I've been asked by John not to spend my whole half, but okay. So let me. Okay, so now I have. So this is mid front. Okay, I will mark this one. Scroll. Okay. If I am interested in computing a matrix element like that, what I have to do is to compute. So the trace means integral of a dq q e minus, so this is e minus theta times the operator times e times u of t2 u of minus t2 times u of t1, which is u of t1 minus t2 times a times u of minus t1. See, I'm computing an object like that. Okay. Now, I can revise this as d of dq, d over dq1, d over dq2 of qe minus beta h u of minus t1 q1 q1a q1 I'm sorry, yes, q1 because it's an eigenstate, q1 u of t1 minus t2 q2 q2b q2 q2 u of t2 q. I'm just inserting identity operator. And I'm using the fact here that A and B are diagonal in the Q basis. Because A is some function A of Q and B is some function B of Q. So that's the only matrix element which counts for A and B are diagonal matrix elements. So now I can write this as a path integral where q of 0 equal q and q of t2 equal q2, but then I have an I over h bar. So this is a real time path integral. You see? This is just b of q2. This is also a real-time path integral, but from q of t2 equal to 2 and q of t1 equal q1, because I'm going from q2 t2 to t1 and from q2 to q1. This is a of t1. This is a, oh, and I can rewrite this as q once again. This is a real-time path interval, but in reverse, because I'm going from t1 to 0, so q of t1 equal q1 and q of 0 equal q, and this last term is a Euclidean time path integral. Period. Tau equal h bar over kbt. So I can decompose this big object that I want to compute, this one, as a convolution, a product of path integral, where first I use a path integral at real time from 0 to time t2. Then I used real-time path integral from time t2 to time t1. Then I used a real-time path integral from time t1 to time 0, which means I'm computing the inverse of the evolution from time 0 to time t1. And then I'm multiplying by exponential minus beta h and taking the trace by taking a Euclidean path integral with period tau. So this is a real-time path integral. And these are Euclidean time path integral. But you see that you can just use both the results of path integral at real time and the result of path integral at Euclidean time to compute this kind of object, and it's given by an integral like that. You see the principle. Of course, you have to do the calculation, but it works in any case. You see? And one final remark is that in this formula, if I take a path integral along a path like that, and here I have a of q of t1 and b of q of t2, and t1 and t2 are somewhere along this line, in fact, you see that you have two different cases. If t1 is larger than t2, as I consider, first I am computing b of t2, and then I'm computing matrix element of the operator A of T1. You see? And if T1 is less than T2, then what I would have computed is first some matrix element of the operator A of T1. And then I would have calculated some matrix element of the operator B of T2. Okay? And in fact, this is true even if A and B do not commute. For instance, if the operator would involve some part of the speed of the impulsion of the operator. Okay. So in fact, this formula is quite valid. And in fact, the general result is that this is the trace of E minus beta h times what is called the time order product of A of T1 and B of T2. This is the path integral formula defined in that way computes always matrix element of operators where in the Heisenberg picture the operator located at a small time are put to the right of the operator located at the large time, simply because the path integral goes from time, small time to large time before going back. So in fact, the path integral methods in Geras gives you always expectation value or matrix element of time order products of operators. And time ordered products is something which is related to the normal ordered products that you have met in the canonical quantization. Yes?
But if you don't commute, then don't you need to do something else to put B in front of A?
No, the point is that in the path integral, you know, I have a path integral here, and I assume that doing a path integral where I compute the phase associated to a trajectory, and I multiply by the value of A at some time and the value of the observable at some time. So here, those are numbers. In the path integrals, A of Q of T is a number. It's a random variable, and I'm integrating over all the possible value of this random variables. And pure numbers commute, you see. While what I'm computing at the end is a trace or the matrix element of an operator, of a quantum operator. And quantum operators
do not commute in general.
Yes.
You see? So the point is that the path integral, in fact, automatically order the operator. Because in a path integral, you compute the evolution operator from time zero to some time, then you say at some point the path integral knows, I meet an operator because I have to evaluate this object. So I evaluate first this operator. Then I continue to compute the evolution of my quantum systems. And at some point I say, I am meeting a second operator. Then I evaluate the number associated to this operator. And then I continue, and if I am computing a trace, I go back and I do these kind of things. But you see, but the path integrals, you know, compute the matrix element of the quantum operators by a simple integral, but in a successive way. It goes from small time to large to larger time. So it automatically orders the operator, and the operator which is associated to a smaller time are put before the operator which are associated to a larger time. So the path integrals automatically order the operator, unless you do some fancy things. There is a way to do that. You can play with the path and do a lot of things, but that's much more complicated. If you do a simple path integral, as we shall do, you always order the operator from small time to large time. And by definition, this is what is called time order product operator. But we'll come back. We'll discussing the quantization of the free feed. We'll see precisely time order product of feed operator appearing out of the calculation using path integral methods. So that we shall do tomorrow. Okay. Okay. Thank you.